Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I'm delighted to welcome Alison Metcalf, who is the chief executive officer, executive vice president, you name it, of North America, US and Canada, and Australia. And Alison, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. Always a pleasure to be here.
For the last couple of weeks, you would think that there was very little in Ireland other than the opening of the exhibition for Game of Thrones, the most fascinating and so well followed HBO television series. Incredible publicity, but so focused, you know, on Belfast and Northern Ireland, as many would say, well, it should be.
That's right. I mean, I suppose it's very exciting, particularly if you're a Game of Thrones fan. The final series, Series 8, just launched here this week, last night here in the US. And I suppose what Game of Thrones has done over the last number of years is really kind of put Northern Ireland on the map. It is filmed elsewhere, but it's filmed mainly in Northern Ireland. And Northern Ireland has really become known as Game of Thrones territory.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fantastic for tourism. There's about 26 locations you can visit. It has cultivated numerous businesses. There's more than 20 mm-hmm. companies offering different types of tours around Northern Ireland. So for Game of Thrones fans, it's the place to be. And of course, as season 8 will wrap up in the next sort of 6 or 7 weeks, there's going to be a huge legacy going forward. As you mentioned, there was a touring exhibition which just opened in the Titanic Quarter last week, and by all accounts, I haven't seen it, but it looks tremendous. And even bigger for next year, the Linen Mill Studios in Banbridge are opening up, which is 110,000 square feet, so people will be able to go and see the original sets and costumes. So there's going to be a huge amount of people to do and see as it relates to Game of Thrones going forward, even after the series ends.
I thought that, thanks to Anderson Cooper and so many others, one who doesn't watch or follow Game of Thrones would definitely have an interest in going to the locations. You know, it's like, well, let's see what they're talking about.
Exactly. I mean, the publicity, as you said, has been fantastic. I mean, Anderson Cooper was there, NBC News, New York Times had a wonderful story today.
Mm.
It's filming in some of the most spectacular locations in Northern Ireland, so certainly down in County Down, in Castle,
sure.
Castle Whelan, and down in Tullymore Forest, up on the North Antrim coast. So whilst a lot of these locations don't look like themselves on Game of Thrones, but to go and actually see the locations themselves,
with
great interpretation around Northern Ireland, it's really put Northern Ireland on the radar screen for people that probably would never have considered it.
Right.
And it just shows how powerful television can be in terms of influencing travel decisions.
Of course, Tourism Ireland is not sitting in at the edge of all of this. You've been very involved. Tourism Ireland has really been involved in making sure that visitors to Northern Ireland know exactly where to go. They don't have to,
Well, we do, and obviously we're marketing the island of Ireland and very proud to market Northern Ireland as part and parcel of that. And I suppose as it relates back to Game of Thrones, we've worked very closely with HBO and with our colleagues at the Tourism Northern Ireland to make sure that any campaigns that we put out there, and with each series we've had a variety of campaigns to amplify that story and always tie it back to the fact that Game of Thrones is filmed in Northern Ireland. Game of Thrones and Northern Ireland is Game of Thrones territory. So right now we've just launched a campaign which will again roll out with each episode. A lot of publicity, a lot of social media around that, but some people might be familiar with the famous Game of Thrones tapestry that we were involved in over the last couple of series, where as each episode unfolds we add that to the tapestry. So the Game of Thrones tapestry now is on display at the Ulster Museum, and by the time Series 8 is finished, it'll be 90 feet long. We've had the Doors of Thrones campaign. We've now got one which is looking at stained glass windows, and each after each episode, a large stained glass window is actually unveiled at a different location in Belfast. So people can, again, follow. They represent one of the houses in Game of Thrones each, and there'll be six of them, and there'll be people able to follow a trail.
Wow, yeah. That was, of course, this is not new for tourism Ireland. If we take a look, at the Wild Atlantic Way, for instance, Wild Atlantic Way has been there probably longer than we have, but the easy access, the signposts, not just to get you to to the what is the longest coastal route in Europe, but to actually have facilities along the way that were unheard of.
The Wild Atlantic Way has really captured everybody's imagination, and as you said, it was always there. I suppose what we've done is, and working with our colleagues on the ground at Falkirk Island as well, is bring a lot of those experiences to life. And as you rightly say, there's great signposting. But people visit Ireland for probably three basic reasons. They come for the outstanding landscape, scenery, and there's no better place to experience that than along the Wild Atlantic Way, that coastal scenery. They come for our culture, the unique culture, and that can be expressed in many different ways, whether it's through music, history, genealogy.
Yes.
And then, of course, the warmth of welcome. And right the way around the island, but particularly on the Wild Atlantic Way, you can golf on the Wild Atlantic Way. You've got castles on the Wild Atlantic Way.
Right.
And we're trying to encourage people to get off the beaten track and go north of Galway as well, and go up into Sligo and Donegal.
You won't get any arguments from me in that.
We're trying to sort of encourage them to go to Sleeve League as much as they, as the Cliffs of Moher are amazing.
Yeah.
We're trying to get people to venture to new locations. And
yeah.
As I say, food along the Wild Atlantic Way, golf, history, culture, it's all there.
Right.
But it's the people on the ground, and I suppose what we've done from a marketing perspective is clustered experiences. So when people stay in a particular location, they've got lots of different things to do. So they're not just driving and passively seeing things. They can stop off and do a food tour, visit a castle, go golfing, whatever they want to do, take a hike or a kayaking, kayak around Achill Island or somewhere like that.
Yeah. During the St. Patrick's season, I think right across America in particular, there was such an emphasis, and rightly so, about food, Ireland, which, many listeners to this program, if we go back half a century, you could say many things about Ireland, but going over to Ireland to experience food would not be high on the list. But not just in the Irish market, but right across the board. Ireland has really captured, a tremendous reputation for food. And a lot of it, I think, Alison Metcalf, has to do with the fact that you're talking about local food, the real organic food.
It is. I mean, I think when people travel, food is such an important part of that travel experience. And I always remember being at Condé Nast a few years ago, and they were sharing some research around passions and motivations for American travelers, and they were saying that food is the is the biggest currency in travel. So it is all about local, and it's about that sort of people are interested in the provenance of what they're eating, the story behind those ingredients, and Ireland does it incredibly well. I mean, if you think about it, we've got a temperate climate. You're never far from the ocean. We've got wonderful, green grass, and almost everything you eat is organic. So you've got great ingredients. So if you've got good ingredients, we shouldn't be, shouldn't go far wrong. And I think it's about having a good culinary experience at every touch point, at every stage of your holiday or your vacation. It's not just about the Michelin-style restaurants, which we have 16, but it is about having a really good food experience at your bed and breakfast, at the gastro pub, at the coffee shop, at the visitor attraction, wherever you go, having that modern twist on possibly a traditional dish. And it's also about being able to, experience the broader sort of food story. So you could participate in a food tour. You can visit a lot of the artisanal producers, cheese producers.
Yes.
Go to the salmon farms. You can, the food markets. In the same way that when you go to Italy or France, you want to do these things. You can do all of that now in Ireland. So those in the know that we have a good culinary experience, but there's still a lot of people that still believe that the old perception of Ireland, not having a terribly good reputation for food, is still there. But those that have been know that that's not the case. And it's the most surprising part of anybody's vacation when they come back. They say, we thought the food would be okay, but actually we were blown away by it.
Yeah.
And I think we're very fortunate to have a lot of very passionate young chefs around the island of Ireland that are great ambassadors for Irish food and for that, and take great pride in producing some of the best dishes going and telling the story behind it. And I think that's what people want to hear.
Yeah. And there's still some great family-run restaurants, and you know, particularly in the areas of the houses, the hotels, that have been doing this for generations. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I think that's what, when people go to Ireland, I mean, they are looking for something that is unique and different
and affordable,
and they want to sort of get under the skin of the destination, and it's, you know, it's very easy to do that in Ireland. So I reference, you know, look at B&B Ireland. I mean, yeah. They represent 500 or 600 different independently owned, family owned bed and breakfasts. No better way to get a local experience and right. to enjoy, you know, the inside track on a destination. Ireland's Blue Book, again, it's a grouping of independently run sort of small country house hotels, original Irish hotels, again, marketing a variety of those independently homes. Each one is unique, each one is independently owned and operated, and each one takes great pride in offering their own sort of unique blend of brand, I should say, of hospitality. So hospitality is in our DNA, and I think you know, we should never forget that.
And we shouldn't forget either that not today or yesterday, but excuse me, that Tourism Ireland has more than a passive role in ensuring that when people go to Ireland, that, you know, Tourism Ireland has their eye on the hotels, the B&Bs, and everything in between. If you don't meet the standard in Ireland, and now with 10 million visitors having crossed the 10 million mark last year, people are a little wary. When they go to places, and I just wanted to ask you about the influence of the Airbnb, which is, obviously it's not going to go away. How does Falter Ireland, Tourism Ireland, how do they keep an eye on that, because it changes every day?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are, a lot of Airbnb accommodation in Ireland, and particularly sort of in the cities. Dublin has a lot, and I suppose it's very welcome, because we have seen significant growth in tourism, and at certain times of the year, accommodation has been under pressure, so they have provided much needed additional accommodation. Also, there are people that's the way they like to travel. They want to stay in, in an Airbnb type accommodation, whether it's a house, an apartment, or a room in someone's home, and really sort of doing the local thing. So it's how people travel. So in terms of how it's regulated, I mean, there are governments brought in, obviously some regulations in there, as they have done in many cities around the world, to make sure that obviously it's not taking sort of valuable accommodation out of the sort of the regular rentals market, obviously, because obviously the housing situation in Ireland is something that's always under, closely being monitored. So it's welcomed, it's regulated in a way that I think works for both consumers, and from the point of view of from a Tourism Ireland perspective, is that it's offering another type of accommodation, and it's much needed capacity to accommodate. Whilst we've seen a big increase in hotels coming on stream, long overdue, but we are seeing new hotels coming on stream, so that capacity pressures that we've had in the past are being eased. I think Airbnb is a bit like the internet, it's here to stay. It's how people want to, some people like to travel. And sometimes I've met people that have said to me they haven't stayed in a hotel for 3 years. They always look for an Airbnb. So people have their preferred methods of travel. And I think it's important that Ireland, like any other country, has choice and options. And obviously it has to be managed and regulated in a way that makes sense for everybody.
Now, we mentioned, of course, Northern Ireland, the Wild Atlantic Way. And there has been a great promotion and emphasis. Maybe those of us from west of the Shannon might say, you know, about time we overshadowed Ireland's ancient east. But actually, that that promotion went and continues to go do very well.
It is, and Ireland's ancient east is obviously it's very different to the Wild Atlantic Way. It's not a specific defined route. It focuses much more on sort of built heritage. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a clustering of experiences. So whether you're interested in some of the you know, stately homes and gardens, Christian heritage, ancient heritage, and particularly, and
sure.
I think, you know, North Americans are very interested in heritage because generally speaking, they're coming from a young country and they're looking for something that they don't have at home. So places like Newgrange and mm-hmm. You know, incredibly popular. We have to manage them obviously with care, but no, it's doing extremely well. Kilkenny, Waterford, Wexford,
yeah.
They've all developed great new experiences on the ground, and across these brands such as the Wild Atlantic Way and also Ireland's Ancient East, what we're trying to do is trying to tap into people's interests and passion points. So if it's food, if it's golf, if it's culture, if it's music, there's something to do in each of these areas. So it's all about offering people a lot of choice, a lot of mm-hmm. variety, because when you're trying to appeal to people, and it's a very competitive business out there, they're looking at Italy and France and Spain, all great destinations. We obviously want them to go to Ireland as soon as possible. We need to make sure that Ireland is a talked about destination, comes across as offering a lot to do and see. Whether they do it all doesn't really matter, but people need to get a sense that they have lots of options before they commit to a destination.
Some years ago, I felt that in addition to Tourism Ireland's website, ireland.com, being, you know, designed to get people from all over the world to visit Ireland, I, you know, felt it was an encyclopedia of Ireland. That this, if you log on to ireland.com, a lot of people do, the information with respect to the updating of the information on ireland.com is incredible.
It is, and I think one thing that's worth pointing out is it's an impartial site. You know, Tourism Ireland doesn't sell anything, so it's a site that really is a one-stop shop in terms of it's designed to give to people inspiration and ideas on where to go, what to do, how to do it. It focuses on different themes, so whether you're interested in food or golf or music, if you're interested in travelling to, you know, along the Wild Atlantic Way, Ireland's Ancient East, if you're interested in an escorted tour or having
sure.
an independent tour, there's something on there for everybody. It also talks about, you know, it gives people suggested itineraries, and it also talks about the benefit of travelling in the shoulder months. We're trying to get people to travel year-round, so it just talks about some of the, all, you know, it's basically a one-stop travel shop, and again, it gives you also basic information around air access, flight information, and things like that.
The gateways to Ireland.
18 gateways in the United States, 24 from North America, and growing. So, as we say, it's never been easy to get to Ireland. But ireland.com is a one-stop travel shop. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We have a pretty extensive social media following.
I want to thank you for joining us. There's one final question that I would like to get out of the way. The extension of Brexit now up to trick-or-treat Halloween, seriously, has that effect? We know that it has had a massive effect, say, on Britain and other Europe and around the place, but has that really affected North America and travel from North America to Ireland?
It hasn't, Adrian. I mean, obviously, uncertainty is never good for business. It's never consumers don't like uncertainty, and we are monitoring that. And as you rightly said, we've monitored it for the last couple of years in Britain since the United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union. But as it relates to North America, we have done some research here. It is not having any impact on travel intentions right now. It is business as usual, and 2019 is looking like another strong year for us. So again, uncertainty is never good, but at the moment, it's with the decision having been kicked down the road, as we say, to Halloween, we just have to, we watch it very, and we monitor it very carefully, and we'll plan accordingly. But at the moment, it does not seem to be impacting upon North America.
So Metcalf, again, who runs North America, U.S., Canada, and Australia, thank you again. And for the rest of the story, log on to Ireland.com. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.